Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about the news and whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel. Joining him are civil rights attorney and magazine editor Arsalan Iftikhar, political science professor Dr. Lester Spence, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. I may jump in from time to time, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Yo, fellas, what's up? Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, Jimmy, what's happening?
Oh, good, man. Great.
Chilling. All right. Well, you know what? Senator Barack Obama gave perhaps the most important speech of his career this week, addressing comments from his former pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Michelle, we got some tape around here. Is that right?
You sure? You want to hear his, look, it was a 37-minute speech, but you want to just hear a short clip?
Sure.
All right. Here you go.
For the men and women of Reverend Wright's generation, the memories of humiliation and doubt and fear have not gone away, nor is the anger and the bitterness of those years. That anger may not get expressed in public, in front of white coworkers or white friends, but it does find voice in the barbershop.
Got that right,
that's,
bro. Got
hey,
that right.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, Barack.
Thank you.
That's what I'm talking about.
Thank you, Michelle. You know what? You know what? Barack outlined something I've been saying for years, that, you know, everybody here knows that, you know, older black people, for better or for worse, are some of the most intolerant people in America, because, you know, they've seen it all and they've been through it all. And they're resentful against young
right.
black kids for not knowing, you know, not remembering when you just couldn't pee anywhere you wanted to.
Right.
And they're resentful against white America for not giving them some kind of,
dignity,
you know, door prize.
Respect.
Door prize for
props.
Like, yeah, or respect or props for going through all that. You know what? But Ruben, some people say this was his most important speech ever. Do you agree with that?
I do. And I think he hit it right out of the park. But before I talk about the speech, just let me talk about the generational thing for a second, because I've fought that battle in the Latino community as well. Because I've been told for a long time by Latino baby boomers and the World War II generation folks that, you know, I haven't had the experience yet, I haven't lived, and so just sort of sit there and be quiet. And I think that the problem and the retort that I've had to throw back at these folks is that it's true that you all have had a lot of these experiences, but let's be frank, they've all been bad. And because they were bad, you have this anger and this bitterness that I, as a young person, would rather do without. So mm-hmm. I think that's a blessing that Barack Obama has that Jeremiah Wright does not have, that he doesn't have to carry that burden with him. Now, as to the speech, it was a master stroke. I think he touched all the bases he needed to touch. He talked a lot about race, a lot about the Wright controversy. But let me just end with this. I think the significance is the reaction to the speech. I was surprised that a lot of folks out there, including a lot of white commentators, still didn't think the speech went far enough.
Yeah.
And
that
right.
made me so disappointed in the commentators. I just don't think they get it.
Yeah.
You know what I thought? I thought it was great to see this guy stand up and offer something like an apology and keep his dignity. You know, he didn't sell his friend up the river. He didn't say he was totally wrong. What he said was, you know what? When white people aren't listening, this is some of the stuff that older black people say, good, bad, or indifferent. This is my boy. This is my campaign. And let's keep it moving. Now,
I'm sorry,
Spence,
Jimmy, could I just push back on one thing? That you
sure,
the word,
absolutely.
The use of the word friend to describe the relationship with Reverend Right. They don't drink beers and kick it and watch the game.
Okay.
It's a different relationship. And I think I've heard people use the term sort of friend. And he stood with his friend and he didn't want to throw his friend under the bus.
No,
and I
it's
think
like
that
his
that,
father.
Yeah. One of the newspapers called this a teachable moment. And I think one of the things that he has reminded is a lot of Americans are secular and they don't understand what it is to have someone with whom you have a profound connection of choice, which is a member of the clergy, but which is nevertheless almost as powerful as blood.
And also hitting on a point that Ruben made about the white commentator saying that he did not go far enough. You know, if you look at the specter of spiritual advisors and politicians who make apocalyptic and fiery rhetoric, you're going to see the predominance of it being white Republican Christians. And so, I mean, even right now, Senator John McCain hails as a, quote, spiritual guide Reverend Rod Parsley, an Ohio megachurch pastor, who once said that we are at war with Islam. Why do we make the black civil rights lawyer, the black Democratic senator, the black candidate denounce his spiritual advisor on national television and give a big address on race when I don't think that we are even close to hearing anything like that from John McCain or the Republican Party? I see a double standard here.
I'll tell you what. I have learned a lot in the last several days, not about Barack Obama or even about Jeremiah Wright. I have learned a lot about this country
mm-hmm.
and about other people and the whole of society. And listen to me now. There are not enough couches in America. There are not enough psychiatrists in America to help white folks unpack all the baggage that they are carrying around.
That's a good point.
About how black people have been treated in this country.
That's right.
Okay? Absolutely.
That's why when they see Jeremiah Wright, they freak out. They go around through life waiting for the next eruption of the angry black man.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so when they don't find it, they make it happen as if they're waiting for Bill Cosby to somehow morph into H. Rap Brown.
Can I just say, to your point, I saw a cartoon that where it had Wright in the pulpit going, kill Whitey. And there was a picture of Obama with a bag over his head saying, I don't hear it. I'm not here. That kind of thing. He never said anything like that. I mean, the church has 70 men. And let me just say one word about Reverend Wright. Reverend Wright. One of the reasons he's revered is that he was one of the first African-American ministers of note to speak up about sexism, about homophobia in the black church. They have some 70 ministries in that church to minister to all kinds of people. It's a predominantly white denomination that to which he belongs. So if you were preaching a message of racial hatred, do you really think that he would be sanctioned by a predominantly white denomination? He's a fully credentialed ordained minister of the United Church of Christ. He's not some fringe wacko. So I guess my point is that people are entitled to decide that they don't like it, that they think it's inappropriate, un-American, un-Christian. They're entitled to decide that. But I don't think they're entitled to hear kill Whitey in like that.
So, right. And there's a move. So there's a move Pat Buchanan makes in the reaction to the speech. Mm-hmm. Right after the speech is given, where he said, well, you know, all this racial hatred, this hatred against white people, when what Wright talked about was a criticism of the government, right? So the only way that move works is if he thinks the government and white people are equivalents. Right? That's the type of leap that whites have made both explicitly and implicitly since we've been here, right? Where it's like, you hear government, we all live here, I vote, I pay taxes, but when he criticizes America, he's criticizing white people, right?
I'm glad this is happening.
Hold on. Go ahead, Ari. You get the last word.
I'm glad this is happening. Don't forget, in the last 10 years or so, Pat Buchanan has been making his money trying to scare folks because you should be scared of immigrants.
That's right.
Okay? That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But don't forget, back in the 80s, people like Buchanan and others were scared of black folks because black folks were coming in taking all these jobs and all these university spots because of affirmative action.
Yep.
And so we can get all tied up in how Latinos and African Americans should go at loggerheads together. But the message out there for the Joe Madisons and the other folks out there who I think toe this line and sometimes play that nativist rap is that the same folks who have a problem with Latinos and African-Americans, they're afraid of the angry black man. They're afraid of the immigrant. They're afraid of the Muslim. They're just afraid.
Ruben. I think Ruben should go to seminary.
Ruben was waxing poetic today, baby.
He's preaching.
Waxing poetic. Slap his head.
Let us take a turn to D-Town, where, yo, the voices in Detroit are getting louder and louder, Spence. Yo, now the city council wants Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick to resign behind his infidelity scandal being called Textgate. Now, you know what, Dr. Spence, I know that you're a native D-Towner. Do you admire him for standing his ground, or do you think it's time that he stepped away from the office?
So this gets right back to the Obama thing. People in places like Detroit sought to elect black mayors. They didn't seek to just elect them to get the stuff that government does. What they thought that black mayors would do is usher in a different mode of government. They were bringing this new black government, which would be very different from anything we'd seen. Mm-hmm. And what Mayor Kilpatrick did was he violated that. He used the state to actually fire a black employee to save himself. And that violates every standard of blackness that Obama tried to speak to in his speech, that I try to live to on the daily, that we all try to live to on
a
daily.
Wait
it's
a
not
second,
right,
bro.
So he should step
Wait
down.
A second. All that black rah-rah aside, yo, you know, it would be different if he was doing a decent job. I could see him maybe standing his ground, and to
That's
some
right.
degree I admire it. But, if yo, he, if he was a, isn't D-Town spinning around the toilet bowl right about now?
And, if and he was a black
and
Elliot
he's
Spitzer.
Money away.
If he is a black Elliot Spitzer, I'd be like, you know what? He's fighting a good fight.
But Les, with Elliot
Spitzer. He's not, he's not a black Elliot Spitzer.
But Les, with Elliot Spitzer, he's like, I did it. I got caught. I'm out. Kwame had a 7-1 vote of no confidence in the Detroit City Council. I mean, nobody in the city wants him there anymore because they don't think that he could be an effective mayor. And I think it's time for him to just say, I'm out.
Let's not push this too far. Kwame is not like Frederick Douglass here. I mean, think about why he's in trouble. It's more like Frederick's in Hollywood. It's more like, you know.
Ruben's on a roll today.
It's true. I'm telling you. I mean, let's not get all high and mighty. This is why you're in trouble, pal. And I think what's interesting about in watching this, I was thinking back to Spitzer. What is it about a certain politician that decides they can ride out this storm, that they're going to come out better at the other end? They're going to survive this like a Marion Barry might, or like a Bill Clinton might, as opposed to Elliot Spitzer, who throws in the towel?
That's a good question. Kwame seems
kind of soft-made.
Longevity.
You can look at Spitzer. You can look at Spitzer and see he's not.
I could see Kwame writing this out.
Hold on. Well, check this out. Speaking of New York, yo, what's up with Patterson coming right up and telling you, yeah, me and my wife had our thing. I stepped away to the day's end, and she did her thing while we had a soft patch in our relationship. Well, what's up with him being so forthcoming? Was that a good move, or was that was just TMI? Which was okay, L. Spence, you tell me, which was it?
It was a good move, because the thing is, he's gonna have to run again.
It's kind of like a Magic Johnson.
I told you he wasn't
remember?
That blind.
Yeah,
you know?
90.
Like it was like a Magic Johnson move, you know? Like remember when Magic was about to be
outed for
being HIV positive, back when a lot of people didn't know about it, and he said, you know what, I'm gonna tell my story myself.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna wait to have it be told.
You know what, I mean, that's really a rough job. Whenever you hold office, man, you know, I wrote a piece, and I said, you know what, holding office is a tough gig, and I don't know. I think maybe the elected official might need a little something on the side, you know, but I might not be the guy to ask, you know.
No, you aren't.
Shut his mic off, please.
Well, just don't pay for it with state money.
It's more complicated with Patterson, because Patterson, you know, innocently not just outed himself, but he outed the woman he had the affair with.
Yeah.
And apparently her husband didn't know this.
Oh, snap. Oh,
and so they show up with, like, cameras, television cameras to the guy's house, and he's, like, throwing stuff at the television
camera. That sucks.
I didn't think he was violated.
Ladies
now
and gentlemen,
better,
that is a player's violation.
Forget the expression. Watch his back.
It was a player's violation. It was definitely a player's violation.
He put the
that
name
was a
out?
Player's violation.
Oh, that
that
hurts.
Was a player's violation. I must throw a flag on that play.
That's a party foul.
Do not try that at home. All right, let's keep
it
moving. Look to the newsstands. The cover of the latest Vogue magazine features Cleveland Clav. My boy, baller LeBron James, is raising some eyebrows in the black community because some people say it leans toward the worst stereotypes about young black men or black men, period, because it's got kind of this King Kong motif where he's holding
Giselle Bundchen.
Yeah, he's holding her like Faye Raid style, you know, with his mouth open and a ball in one hand and her in the other. You know, who's getting played
it's
here?
All good.
L. Spence?
I saw the image as soon as y'all told me y'all were going to roll with this, and I was like, yeah, King Kong.
The very easy analogy that I made right when I saw it was Giselle Bundchen is dating New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. If Tom Brady and Giselle were on the cover of Vogue, would Tom Brady be making that little face that LeBron was? They'd probably be sipping champagne on a yacht on the
He'd be in a suit.
I'm sorry.
It is interesting. I mean, he is the first African American male ever on the cover of Vogue, which Jimmy knows because he has a subscription. And
we played the dozens today,
and they make him into King Kong.
And so, yeah. So there's that piece. On the other hand, Ruben, you were going to say something. I think. What are you going to say? Like oversensitive, chill.
I was going to say that because I think it's LeBron James. I mean, a lot of it has to do with his own prominence and the fact that he's this successful. If it was.
But
Michael Jordan or anybody else?
If it was Tom Brady,
what again, a fashion magazine.
Would Tom Brady be in that same pose as LeBron James?
I don't know.
See, the problem is you all think magazines and media and art directors.
Maybe Brady
are in the
wouldn't be on the cover because he lost the Super Bowl
of beatifying people, but they're in the business to sell magazines, and we're all talking about it. And you can't find a copy on the newsstand, so mission accomplished.
Right. But these kinds of images aren't just the property of the people who are engaged in them. They send a message. It goes back to everything else. It's an image like blackface. I'm not saying this is blackface, but I'm saying it isn't just the people who care about it are not the only people who are
daylight.
In it.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. I think there's a lot of daylight between this media cover, this magazine cover, and the little black Sambo. There's a lot of daylight there between those two examples.
Sure.
I don't think it's that bad.
But you're talking about the beginning of the 21st century versus the beginning of the 20th. What the question was it racist? I'm not gonna give no protest about it, but it was racist.
Right.
LeBron James could have been in a suit and would have sold as many copies because he's still a
friend. Because he's LeBron.
They made the choice to put the most incendiary, inflammatory image they could imagine
on the cover of King Kong magazine
so they would move some copies.
Wait, hold up. That's one of awesome power and dominance.
I mean, that's the image they're trying to put away, that this guy, you know, is running the world. This guy's on top of the world.
Do I agree
that it's the most incendiary? That's his work clothes.
Michelle, I meant relatively, because there are other images inside. I happen to have a copy of that particular Vogue.
And
there are other images
in the bathroom.
There are other images inside. There are other images that they might be equally or more suitable for. I mean, they're classier images, is what I'm suggesting.
Well,
you know, but the art department decided to put that particular image on the cover because it would move magazines and start controversy, and that's what happened. So mission accomplished.
Yeah.
This is the business we live in. Welcome to 1985. And you know what? I think that's a wrap.
All right,
ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming to the barbershop. But I got to pass it back to the lady of the house, Michelle Martin.
Well, thank you, Jimmy, and happy holidays to everybody for those who are celebrating holidays this weekend. Jimmy Israel joined us from WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida, where he's a freelance reporter and writes for TheRoot.com. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com, and he joined us from KSDS in San Diego. Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney and a contributing editor for Islamica magazine. He joined us from our studios here in Washington. And Dr. Lester Spence is an assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. He joined us from WEAA in Baltimore. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us in the shop today.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Root to the Q's.
Yep, yep.